You're listening to RTI Audio, powered by Rocky Top Insider. This is the RTI Press Pass with Rick Butler and Ryan Shumpert.
Welcome back to the Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. My name is Rick Butler. Joined with me across the table is the one and only Ryan Shumpert. It is a beautiful Tuesday afternoon. Maybe a little bit overcast, maybe a little bit cloudy, actually. I think I jumped the gun on that one. But nonetheless, a nice day here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We are coming to you a day early. Normally, we come to you on a Wednesday. Today is a Tuesday, and that's obviously because today starts, but this is going to be a big week in the world of college baseball, and we will get you ready for every single second of it. Ryan, how you doing, my friend?
Doing well. Glad to be back on here. A little day early, throw off the routine, but as you said, for good reason, as Duval's open up SEC tournament play down in Hoover on Wednesday afternoon. I say that, hopefully it'll be Wednesday afternoon. The weather forecast has not been good for the first half of this week down in Hoover, and I think as we speak, Alabama and Georgia, the first game of the weekend already in a rain delay. So it's going to be interesting to see. The schedule is very tentative. A lot of stuff can change, but we know we'll be seeing some Tennessee baseball as the Vols look to continue their great season.
Yeah, you know, I woke up this morning, and obviously these first couple of games, they're going to start early, right? This one was at 10:30 a.m., so they pushed it back a little bit from the start time. They were able to get out on the field for a little bit. Alabama took a couple run lead. And then, like you just said, the rain came again. So it's going to be interesting watching and kind of tracking that along. Obviously, I think by the time that most people are listening to this, you'll be able to know what happened then. But regardless, it's a fair forecast for the future. Ryan, we're going to get into that baseball stuff coming up later. Want to start in a little bit of a different space, though. And actually, before we even get to the sports, I want to know the story because I haven't really heard this entire story yet. But you broke some news on the website yesterday. Right, or at least kind of shared some news. Nobody had really shared it yet. Talking about the banners in Thompson Bowling Arena. Now, I know that you were there for graduation over the weekend as well. So how did this whole thing kind of come together? Like, how did you notice? Was it maybe somebody else? And then how did you go back and get through? And then, I guess, just for starters, explain why this is a story. I'll give that over to you.
Yeah, well, I was graduating this weekend, and I got a tip the cat to my brother, Grant Shumpert, down in Hoover. I'll be staying with him this week. But, yeah, he noticed it at graduation. He told me after. He's like, yeah, I think they took the NIT banner away in Thompson Bowling Arena. And, you know, I kind of made a mental note of that and went back on Monday morning. The door was open. They were tearing stuff down from graduation, and lo and behold, the NIT banner was no longer there. And kind of an obvious reason it was really the NIT appearances banner. It wasn't like an NIT championship banner. It just had all the years Tennessee made the NIT.
Yep.
The 2 years, maybe 67 and 85, that they had made it to the NIT Final Four on it. And it's right beside the NCAA tournament appearances banner. And you look at that, and the 2022 one was the last slot that they had on that banner. So I imagine there will be the continuation of the NCAA tournament appearances banner. They'll add another one at some point. I would expect Tennessee to make the NCAA tournament again this coming winter and spring. So it'll be another opportunity. But I think a good call. I mean, a universal.
Yeah.
It's hard to do something, anything really in the sports, in the Tennessee sports world, and get universal praise, but I think everyone was glad that the NIT banner was gone.
Hold up. That's a great point. Very rarely do we find something that everybody can agree on, especially in the Tennessee fan base. But not only did you have, I saw students at UT who are happy about that, right? Graduates, just fans. Heck, even the one and only Chris Lofton was on our Rocky Top Insider Instagram page, which you can go follow, at Rocky Top Insider. Chris Lofton, great, number 5. He was on our Instagram page, and he was very happy that the NIT banner got taken down as well. So, I mean, everybody from students to fans to alumni to legends, everyone seems pretty universally happy.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on it in the article where, you know, the NIT, it used to not be, you know, kind of a joke or something to make fun of. I mean, it was never as important as the NCAA tournament, but back when, before the tournament expanded to 64 teams, you had a lot of good teams that would make the NIT, and that was always kind of a pretty cool runner-up prize if you could make a deep run there. Obviously, that's changed really both of our lifetimes. I can't remember the NIT ever being a very big deal, and even less so now that it's not going to be in Madison Square Garden the next couple of years. At least the Final Four of it won't. So definitely something that the other fan bases, Kentucky most noticeably, used to kind of make fun of Tennessee basketball and poke fun at. And
rightfully so. They were in our Twitter mentions as well yesterday. I mean, you know. Throwing some shade here and there too, but you're right. Like it was loud and clear.
Yeah, it was. But and again, that's you're gonna have an NIT banner. You're leaving yourself open to get poked fun at. So it's all good fun, funny jokes and stuff. Yep. But I think a good call by Tennessee to get rid of it, and it'll probably go in some closet or some basement somewhere.
I know I'm stealing somebody's tweet here, but it'll be folded up right next to the beer barrel, right? There's a couple of other memorabilia items from the past that are in some closet, right? So, some Neyland Stadium or Thompson Bowling Arena closet somewhere. But, hey, sticking right there on the basketball court, we got two stories from the basketball world to get into. Neither one of them too big, but certainly big news for this upcoming season. Number one, on Saturday afternoon, CBS Sports' John Rothstein first reported that Josiah Jordan James would be returning to Tennessee next season. And then on Sunday, Josiah confirmed it himself with a post on Twitter. He said another year to play in front of the coolest fan base in the world. Coolest was a funny little word there to use. But either way, he says, let's make this one to remember. Not really too shocking news. We know that he you know, went through the process in the month of April, and so the NBA draft process, the evaluation, seems like it maybe not have come back as favorably as he wanted, but I don't know if that was necessarily the expectation. One way or another, Josiah Jordan James returning to Tennessee for one more year. What was your initial thought?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, not a huge surprise what was expected. And look, I don't even know if it's he was disappointed by the feedback. Rick Barnes has always really encouraged his guys to go do that. And I think a lot of times what they hear from NBA teams is what Rick Barnes is already telling them. This is where you need to improve. This is what's going to be the difference in you being a draft pick or a first-round pick or whatever the threshold is. And I think it's always a good experience, and it's a really good rule change just in general by the NCAA to kind of let these guys go in, kind of get a feel for where they're going to go and still have the opportunity to come back. And while it's not a surprise, it's kind of the classic don't count your chickens before they hatch, because – completely changes the dynamic of next year's team if Josiah Jordan James is not on it. And he was, I would say, him and Kennedy Chandler, the two most important players to last year's team. And while the whole season Josiah might not have been one of the best players, but when you look at what he did the last 2 months of the season, he 1,000% was one of the best players, if not the best player on that roster. And what he can do with his versatility and his defense is so important, and I think you really saw him turn a corner offensively too last season. And if he can continue that going into next year, I think for one, he's going to have a really good chance to improve his draft stock and be an NBA draft pick in the 2023 draft. And at the very more immediate future, it's going to be a huge benefit for Tennessee's offense as they kind of try to move on with life without Kennedy Chandler, who, as we know, facilitated so much of their offense's success last season.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I think you are absolutely spot on there. And, yeah, I think I misspoke on disappointing, because that's not exactly what it was. You know, this is really a great opportunity for these players, right? Because you're right. It's not necessarily you have to go commit to the NBA, right, before you want to, maybe before you're ready to. But it does give you a taste into that world, right? You get to see what some of those scouts are thinking. You're right. You know, the coaching staff and Barnes, they're probably giving them a lot of that feedback. But this is just a great opportunity for these guys to go out and learn a little bit about what happens here, right? So at least they're a little bit more prepared for it next year. And I mean, we've seen Tennessee players do this in the past before. We've seen just college basketball players do this in the past before. It is nothing new. However, we, what is it, coming up on June 1, that is the deadline to remove your name from the draft eligible list. And that is currently where Santiago Vescovi lies right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, still hasn't pulled his name out or announced plans to stay in. So kind of like Josiah, I think the expectation is for him to probably pull out, but you never know until you see it 100%. So that'll certainly be something worth monitoring this next week.
So in other news on the court, go back to last Friday. Really, Ryan, this spring has been a big recruiting win for Tennessee basketball. You think about Julian Phillips, the 5-star recruit that Tennessee pulled in, the number 12 overall prospect. You think about Tyreek Key, the Indiana State graduate transfer that's coming to Tennessee. Now, last Friday, Tennessee adds another very talented, very dynamic prospect in 4-star four-star wing player DJ Jefferson, originally from Richardson, Texas, kind of right there in the Dallas area, currently plays with Minnesota Prep Academy, and was originally a Tulsa commit, actually. But after a little bit of a coaching change there, just some stuff going on with the Tulsa program, he ends up backing out of his NLI and opens back up his recruitment, and then Tennessee comes in and they land DJ Jefferson, four-star recruit. What was your initial reaction from this? What does this mean for Tennessee going forward?
Yeah, I think it's a get that more than anything provides depth. I think he's a wing player a lot like Josiah in the sense that he's, one, left-handed, which is doesn't necessarily mean their games are similar, lefty. But is a natural comparison between the two. But that same height, 6'5", maybe an inch smaller than Josiah, not a point guard, plays on the wing, but has the kind of versatility and athleticism to play a lot of different spots, and we'll see how effectively he could play four in the small ball going forward. But that's still the kind of same type of player, really good athlete, a lot of room to grow as a shooter, but versatile and can do a lot of different things. And you're right, it was a Tulsa signee, and in fact got released from that NIL after Frank Hafe is no longer there. And now that's an interesting one because he's had a lot of connections to Tennessee. I know him and Barnes are real close. Kim English, who started his coaching career with Hafe at Tulsa before going to Colorado and then Knoxville. So there's a lot of kind of connections there, and I think it almost makes sense that a player that was going to go play for Frank Hafe ends up playing for Rick Barnes. And I think a lot of similarities in how they approach the profession and how they approach coaching.
6'5", 190 pounds. Ryan, I would say that he's a very entertaining player to watch, and he kind of has that entertaining style of play. I think that he is, like you said, he's got a lot of versatility to his game, but he's just got those big moments to his game. I mean, you watch some of the highlights, and he is that player who goes for the big dunks, right? He wants to make those big plays for his team. Now, I'm not saying that that's the lane you pigeonhole him into, and obviously high school ball is going to be a lot different than playing in the SEC at Tennessee, but I think that that is kind of his natural game. I think he's a really entertaining player. I think he's got a vast offensive skill set that's fascinating to watch. He can shoot from the perimeter, but also has a knack for just putting his head down and trying to drive to the basket. And then, like you said, the left-handed, right? It brings a little bit of difference to add to his overall uniqueness. So you go back and you look through at Tennessee's players for the class. Again, five-star Julian Phillips. You got four-star Knoxville player B.J. Edwards. That was the first commit to the class, and that was all the way back in 2021. He's been a part of this this class for a good minute now as a loyal verbal commit and signee for Tennessee. Then you go down, four-star DJ Jefferson, and then your fourth one that you're rounding things out with, again, like we said, Tyreek Key, the grad transfer from Indiana State. Which one of these players excites you the most going forward?
I think it has to be Julian Phillips just from the immediate impact that he can make and obviously the five stars beside his name, top 10 recruit nationally. And I think all three, you know, Tyreek Key is a grad transfer with one more year of eligibility. You know he's going to play a role in this team, but what exactly that role is, we're not 100% sure. And it doesn't seem like he's going to come in and be a starter right away. And Phillips may not either, and that's not a given by any means, but you know he's going to play a lot of minutes, and he's going to be a guy who's probably kind of like Kennedy Chandler, that Tennessee hopes can continue to get better and better as the year goes on and be playing his best basketball when March comes around.
Hey, on that note too, shout out to Vince here, but ESPN, what is this? ESPN National Recruiting Director, Paul Biancardi, he tweeted out yesterday just kind of a superlatives list, right, for some of the top prospects in the class. You know, your top mismatch, top playmaker, top rebounder, so on and so forth. And Julian Phillips was right there as ESPN's National Recruiting Director's super sleeper. Not just a sleeper, a super sleeper.
How can no disrespect here, but how can a top 15 recruit be a super sleeper? Who's sleeping on him?
Anybody not in the top 10, I guess.
I guess so.
Super sleeper.
Yeah, not even just a sleeper, a super sleeper.
That's exciting to see, and it certainly gives you a face to look forward to next year. But I think you're right, man. This is just a different kind of cat. We talked about last week, right, where he ranks in the all-time Tennessee rankings. You've seen the other three guys from Tennessee in the recent 2 years be first-round draft picks. Kennedy Chandler projects to be one as well. So you got to think that, hey, a quality year from Julian Phillips with the skill set that he has, maybe he is in line for that same thing as well. But what do you say we flip things over to the football side?
Yeah, let's do it. Plenty of recruiting to get to there.
All right, so this is a massive weekend for Tennessee.
Yeah, huge.
I can't even keep track of all the different prospects that are going to be in. Rocky Topology And this is not confirmed, but they had a big list out today I saw on Twitter, so shout out to them. But I believe it's something along the lines of 4 5-stars, 24 stars, 8 3-stars, and then a couple of junior college players all will be in Tennessee this weekend. And it is a massive, massive recruiting weekend. Not just do you have guys who are commits, who are foundational pieces of the class who will be in, like a Nico Iamaliava, like a Jack, excuse me, I don't know if he's going to, but there are some other players. Not Nate Spillman, another one from Nashville who's going to be in. That's the one I was thinking of. But you have big-time recruits that are, you know, at national places, and Tennessee is high on those lists. Tennessee is trying to gain some ground on some of those lists. So I think that this weekend is going to be huge for Tennessee.
Yeah, it really seemed like he was building to it for a while. I mean, we compile a lot of announcements of when guys are going to visit, and it seemed like over the last month that half a dozen to a dozen articles we've had where someone is, yeah, I'm going to be on Tennessee's campus Memorial Day weekend. So Tennessee's been building for it. I mean, it's a huge, huge weekend. A lot of big-time players on both sides of the ball. I mean, there's not too much to be said other than that. One guy that I'm really interested, or I think it's a huge visit for, is Vic Burley.
Yeah.
The defensive end down in Georgia. Seems like that one's a Tennessee-Clemson battle. Hasn't been on Tennessee's campus as much as of late. But so to get him on, get him for a big recruiting weekend, and let Rodney Garner minister a little bit of magic, or however you want to say it, because he's as good as anybody in the country, and I think, maybe some national people have given Clemson a slight edge there. As of right now, we've seen it with Tennessee. We've seen it work against Tennessee. You never, yeah. never count out Rodney Garner in a recruiting battle, yep. especially for a kid down in the state of Georgia where he has tons of ties. And obviously at Auburn, at Georgia, at Tennessee, those are three schools you're going to recruit the state of Georgia heavily. And he's done an excellent job of that over his career.
Speaking of the state of Georgia, Ethan Davis, that's a tight end commit for Tennessee. He will be here. Caleb Herring, the number one ranked player in the state of Tennessee. He is from the Nashville area, mid-state.
Yeah, Murfreesboro.
Okay, so he will be here as well. That's a Tennessee commit. And then, like I said earlier, Jack Luttrell will be here. That is another player from the state of Georgia. You know, one of the things that I'm really fascinated with this weekend, and you know, a lot of these will come out in the next month or so. Again, looking at the spring recruiting timeline that we have up on the website, you got some big names that are going to be planning to visit Tennessee or make announcements in the month of June. But I really like the way that Tennessee is focusing on the trenches. And granted, you know, we're just looking at one weekend, but you can tell, man, they're bringing in some very high-level talent. Lucas Simmons, Bryson Sanders, that's a kid from Chattanooga who is a very highly touted prospect. So they're bringing in some high-quality offensive linemen, a couple of defensive linemen here and there, but I think that it's just, we know how important of a place that is for the SEC to recruit, right? Yeah. Ultimately, you can have as much skill on the outside, skill in the speed areas as you want, but you have to have those trenches locked down if you want to be able to compete for four quarters for an entire season. And I like the way that Tennessee looks to be focused on that. No surprise, but obviously when you look at the list, it's just good to see.
Yeah, definitely, and not even focused on it because you know they're going to be focused on it, which was, I think, is kind of your point. But to see that they're making some headway with big-time recruits.
There you go. That's what I was trying to say. And they're making room.
Yeah, and we've talked about it on here before. The thought that Tennessee, with Josh Heupel, they're going to be able to be really, really appealing and probably get some big-time quarterbacks and receivers. And don't get me wrong, those positions are extremely important. Quarterback is more important than a single position on the field, as much as important as the offensive and defensive line are. But that's no surprise when Tennessee has success there just because of how appealing the style of play is. For Tennessee to truly get to, I was going to say the next level. It's probably two levels down the road of where they're competing with Georgia and Alabama. You got to recruit at those spots at a really, really high level. And you mentioned it. Bryson Sanders, I think, is a big one to get on campus. I know he's making his announcement next in June, and that's an LSU heavy SEC battle. So those are the big time battles you got to win, especially the ones in your home state just down the road in Chattanooga.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Going back to Rocky Topology on Twitter, again, good. Good source there. They wrote earlier today, according to On3 Sports, Tennessee currently leads for these four recruits. 5-star wide receiver Carnell Tate. That's a guy we've talked about quite a bit. 5-star offensive lineman Francis Mauigoa. 4-star defensive lineman Hunter Osborne. And then 4-star offensive lineman, Hunter Osborne. And then 4-star O-lineman Bryson Sanders, again, like we've been talking about from Chattanooga. So we're going to be talking about those guys more on the website coming up this week. A lot trying to break down what's going to be happening this weekend. So make sure you're checking into the RTI website. But no doubt about it, a big weekend for Tennessee. It'll be interesting to see how things shape up after this weekend, maybe how some of those predictions move around. We will have we'll make sure to track it all.
Yeah, and if there's anything we know about recruiting is that it can fluctuate very quickly. So it's always changing, never ending change, and it'll be interesting to follow this weekend and then going into the month of June, where I think you might start to see a few more announcements.
Ryan, that will be this weekend, but leading up into this weekend, oh boy, there's a lot going on the diamond. We're going down to Hoover to talk about the SEC baseball tournament coming up. Your number one Tennessee Volunteers there, the top seeded team in the tournament, will break down kind of their path to the championship and what it's going to look like. Coming up next, don't go anywhere. We got a little Tennessee college baseball next.
We'll be right back. And now, back to the show.
All right, here we go. Back here on the Press Pass, powered by Rocky Top Insider. Ryan, tomorrow you are heading down to Hoover to watch this team for the whole week. That's going to be exciting. You will have great coverage on the website, on the Twitter machine, both your handle, at rshump00. It's a great follow. And at Rocky Top Insider, so make sure you're going to follow both of those. But you will be in Hoover this week. It's going to be a big, big week. But before we even get there, I want to go back to yesterday when the SEC announced their 2022 end-of-the-season awards. Boy, did Tennessee take home quite a bit of hardware.
Yeah.
And who knows? They could have even taken home more, right? Like that's truly how great this team has been this year. So real quick, as just a quick reminder, here is your info. Chase Dolander wins Pitcher of the Year. Drew Beam, freshman pitcher, wins Freshman of the Year. Tony Vitello is your Coach of the Year. All SEC first team players. Chase Dolander, starting pitcher. Trey Lipscomb, third baseman. And Drew Gilbert in the outfield. Drew Gilbert also made the All-SEC defensive team. Then your All-SEC second team, you got Chase Burns and Drew Beam, rounding out Tennessee's starting rotation. And then on the All-Freshman team, Chase Burns and Drew Beam once again, and then Blake Burke adds to that as well. So quite a bit of hardware for Tennessee. What was your big reaction? Were you surprised by any of these in both a positive or a negative way?
No, I mean, nothing was really shocking. Vitello, it's coaches vote on it. And as I think everyone listening to this knows, Tony Vitello is not the most popular man among the SEC coaches, and I was curious to see if he would get snubbed of SEC Coach of the Year. And there's an argument to be made for a few guys, Jim Schnossnagel, I can't even pronounce his last name, Texas A&M's first-year coach, to win the SEC West in the first year, did a really fantastic job. But so I wouldn't have been surprised to say if Vitello didn't win, even though Vitello was 100% deserving of winning. But for him to win it, it made a lot of sense. And I think the other one was Trey Lipscomb not winning SEC Player of the Year, especially given the fact that it got split between Dylan Cruz and Sonny DeShero. So he really finished third in the voting. And look, I think Trey Lipscomb is really, really deserving. If I had a vote, I certainly would have had him in the top two.
Yes.
It's a real tough one with him and Sonny. I think it could go either way. But when you look at the numbers, and especially look at the SEC numbers, what their stats were in conference play, because that's what the vote is really about. I mean, it waits the whole season, but coaches who only face them in SEC play are voting on it, and obviously it's what you do in conference play is a lot more important. And I say that, it wasn't like Trey was just dominating on the bad teams and then struggled against the good teams. I mean, he was fantastic in SEC play too, but you look at those other two guys, they were really, really good too. So I say all that to say, I think Trey Lipscomb was deserving of winning. I don't necessarily think he got snubbed or robbed of the award by any means like that, but it was just a couple of players at the top who had really, really impressive numbers and really, really good seasons. And I think, you know, maybe he was hurt a little bit by the fact that Tennessee just had so many guys win the overall awards and so many guys kind of rack up recognition to where, as good as Trey Lipscomb is, I mean, you could make the case that Drew Gilbert's a better hitter than him. I mean, I'm not sure I would make that case, but you could make it. And Dylan Cruz, DeShero, there's no cases. Those guys are number one on their teams and extremely important to get Auburn to where they're going to host a regional and get LSU back in the NCAA tournament.
That was very well said. I think you are spot on 1,010% right, without a doubt, without a question. If I had a vote after really looking over these numbers, you know, over the last couple of days and really kind of trying to figure out what these guys were for their team and how they should be voted on, I think that I would have had it, you know, Sonny, Trey, Dylan. And so do I think that Trey Lipscomb was robbed of the Player of the Year? Not necessarily, but do I think he was more deserving of it than Dylan Cruz? I do think that. So if there was a split, it feels like, well, maybe he got robbed from the split, but do I think that he got robbed from the award overall? not necessarily, or at least it's a little bit more hesitant to say yes, because you're right. Like, I think that you can absolutely have that opinion and acknowledge that Trey Lipscomb had an unreal year. There was not a single pitcher in the league that enjoyed when Trey Lipscomb got up, or a coach, well, you know, knowing he was on deck, anything like that. He was a tremendous player for Tennessee, but I think that you also just kind of have to look around and look at these stats and say, hey, man, okay, as good as Trey Lipscomb was, it's actually, it's kind of wild that this guy, Sonny, was a little bit better in some spots. And so I think at the end of the day, there's some very, very, very good talent at the top of the SEC. There is no doubt about that. Trey Lipscomb does not come up with the award. I think he was, like you said, I think he is absolutely deserving. To me, I would have had him, you know, split over Dylan with Sonny. But I do think that the award, you know, it is what it is. But that was a fascinating one that people were certainly talking about on the internet yesterday. I know I wrote for the website. You know, I didn't necessarily think he got robbed, or at least I think I wrote that, you know, I hesitate to say that. And man, people were very, not like it was in response, but, you know, people all over the internet, they were very, you know, upset, or they were very, you know, obviously as fans do. And it was fun yesterday to see all these awards go out and, you know, see all the reactions from people and see the reactions from the players and all that kind of stuff. So that was good. But what do you say we move into this weekend?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. What are you looking forward to? I'm going to turn it over to you right here for just kind of the opening. What is your biggest thought? All right, no, I don't want to say that. What is your biggest storyline heading into this week for Tennessee? What is kind of the what to watch for?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Hopefully not weather. I think, as we kind of said at the very lead of the podcast, I think there's going to be a lot of watching the Weather Channel app this week.
For the dedicated podcast listeners, Ryan, I told you last time that if you had another Spades loss with Ben in a rain delay, then I would not be happy. So if that happens this week, boy, you better win.
Yeah, and I think...
And Ben, don't lose!
I think Mike Wilson, the new Sentinel, had said, I'll make sure to bring the card. So, well, I think we're probably going to have some opportunities. But no, yep. I mean, it's SEC baseball tournament is such an interesting event, because when you're in a spot like Tennessee, I think Tennessee could go 2-0 and they would still be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. You're kind of in a there's nothing to win a situation besides, obviously, winning the tournament. And it's kind of the, how important is this? I mean, we've seen it tons of times where teams who struggle in the SEC tournament go on to have a ton of success. I mean, obviously, Mississippi State is the most recent example, where last year they get run-ruled by Florida their first game, they get run-ruled by Tennessee their second game, and they go on to win a national championship. And I think it even some people would go as far, I wouldn't say this, but some people go as far to say that it's good to lose early and not have to use much of your pitching. So when I look at it and outside of, once you get to Friday or you get to Saturday, it's, all right, what does Tennessee need to do to win? Well, what do they need to do to win this whole thing and do it for the first time since 1995? They came up a game short last year, losing to Arkansas in the championship. But I think when you look at it in the first part of the week, early in the week, and it's the week as a whole, it's about getting at all those four pitchers, and really more than that, but I specify the four starting pitchers, a little bit of run, get their arm. Again, you're not going to expand on them much. You're not going to ask a ton of them. But to get those guys some action, to keep them in their – maybe not exactly their routines, but a somewhat similar routine that they've been in. And from there, it's just about finding ways to, as Tony Vitello said today in his media availability, finding ways to play your best baseball and make it a fruitful event.
You know, that's a really fascinating thought about the conference tournaments, because it is such a unique situation for all of these teams, right? Like, you have teams in just wildly different locations for these conference tournaments, and in a lot of ways, and maybe it's because it was just, you know, about a month or two ago, but I think a lot about the March Madness basketball tournament, or excuse me, prior to that, the SEC tournament, right? You have a team like A&M, who went on a wild run. Like, they are playing for their lives. They're playing for their season. They did not want to be in the NIT. They wanted to be in the big dance with everyone else. Meanwhile, you had Tennessee and Kentucky and some of these other teams, Auburn, who knew that they were going to be high seeds, right? But and at that point, you're more so just playing for the experience, right? You're playing to win the game, right? That's why all people play the game at its core, because you want to win. So I think it's just such a fascinating look when you look at these conference tournaments, because so many of these teams are coming into it with different spots. I mean, even in the baseball world, you're looking at teams who are going to be heading into this week trying to play to host a regional. You're going to be looking at teams that are just trying to get into the tournament. And you're going to be looking at teams like Tennessee who, you know, don't really have anything to lose, but they're just trying to, like you said, play their best baseball at the right time of the year. So I think this is going to be a really fascinating tournament to watch. Tennessee's going to get the winner of Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, and those are two, you know, two of the teams that I'm kind of talking about there. I think Ole Miss has certainly less to play for, but excuse me, less to lose, but they're playing for really a chance to get into the tournament.
Yeah.
A little bit of a rough year, so they have a lot on the line here. And then Vanderbilt, they're still trying to host. I mean, they want to bring one of those regionals over to Nashville so that they can host. So you got two teams who are going to be competing. I don't know if when people listen to this, if that you know, if that game will have already been done. But do you have a kind of a prediction? Do you have a thought about who's going to advance?
Yeah, I mean, I'd maybe just go Ole Miss because they've been playing better as of late, and I kind of think, well, Vanderbilt may be hosting a regional still in play after getting swept against LSU last weekend. I think they're really going to have to go on a really deep run.
That'd be tough.
Yeah, to make that happen. And it is also, we talked about it a lot with the SEC tournament in basketball because it applied to Tennessee. You wonder how much committee looks at stuff that happens this weekend, just how much weight that really carries.
Yeah. Didn't even think about that.
So I think that's part of it. But really, I mean, you look at it, it's two really interesting matchups because Tennessee swept both those teams early in SEC play on the road. That Ole Miss series, Tennessee humiliated feels like a little too big of a word, but I mean, they really did. Humbled, humiliated, whatever you want to say. Ole Miss was number one in the country entering that weekend, and they went in a massive tailspin after that, and to where a month ago, it looked like there was not going to be a great chance they were going to make the NCAA tournament. They've played better. Now they're kind of sitting right on the inside of the tournament, but the same thing. Tennessee, if they face Ole Miss, they're facing a team that's going to be trying to look and put, hey, no doubt, let's win this game. Let's make it clear that we're going to be in the NCAA tournament. And then when you look at Vanderbilt, last time Tennessee and Vanderbilt faced, the lasting memory is Drew Gilbert talking about how they were stepping on the throat of Vanderbilt players.
Yes.
So for that in-state rivalry and the way Tennessee, they didn't dominate that series like they dominated the Ole Miss series, but Tennessee did sweep Vanderbilt on the road in their home stadium of Hawkins Field. So, and Drew Gilbert with a little ammunition on those comments following the game on Sunday that weekend. So there's plenty to get to on that, and two really intriguing matchups for different reasons. And then on Tennessee already being to the double elimination part of the tournament, it's a four-team double elimination tournament on their side, and then again on the other side, the winners will meet in the championship game. And the other teams, LSU is locked in as the number four seed. They're already into the double elimination part of the tournament on Wednesday. Like Tennessee, they will face the winner of the Kentucky-Auburn game, which two obviously Kentucky, the lone team to win a series against Tennessee this year, and then Auburn, a team that played Tennessee really well in a three-game series and is going to be a regional host, and they're playing for a chance to be a super regional host too and be a top eight national seed.
I mean, you definitely notice that, right? I mean, you're stomping on someone's throat, you know, like Kentucky
in the choir. That's the quote you're talking about, huh?
Yes, that
when you tend to stomp on someone's throat, they tend to get a little quieter. Woof.
Yeah, which and again, I should say to make it completely transparent, he was talking more about the Vanderbilt fans being quieter as the weekend goes on. He wasn't really talking specifically about the Vanderbilt players, but
that crowd it got softer over the weekend volume wise.
Yeah, it did, and obviously, as I'm sure a lot of people remember, that's the first inning of that series, the Jordan Beck home run incident, and Jordan Beck was getting a lot of cheater yells and accusations.
The bat,
yes,
that's right.
The rest of the weekend, so. It really was. I mean, it was noticeable being there just how much kind of deflated the fans were by the end of that weekend.
Speaking of controversy, do you think we're going to see any controversy in the tournament this year like we did last year with the infamous second base call against Alabama?
Nah, I mean, never rule it out. Never a dull moment with Tennessee baseball. So if you're ruling out controversy, you're probably going to set yourself up to be surprised and working from behind a little bit.
Hey, all we know is to expect the unexpected, right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Any kind of last-minute predictions for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's not particularly. I mean, I think Tennessee cares. I think that would be the one thing. A lot of times you wonder, kind of to our point earlier, how much do these teams care? And it's different. While as good as Tennessee's been the last 2 years, they're not a traditional power in the SEC, and they haven't won this tournament since 1995. And just in general, I don't think it's really in the nature of, to go back to Drew Gilbert, I don't think it's in Drew Gilbert's nature to be okay with losing just because it's not the end of the world. It's any loss kind of feels like the end of the world to Drew Gilbert and probably a handful of other guys on this team, too.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very fascinating to watch. Again, tomorrow, Tennessee is going to play, or at least should play. They're scheduled to play at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if everything lines up like that, that's where they'll be. But right, like you said, it's a we have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, the day has already been quite a bit delayed today to start things off, so it will be wild. Hey, any last thoughts just on anything we might have hit today? Football, basketball, baseball?
Yeah, I'll have one wrapping up thought on baseball, and that's just kind of the regular season numbers. Tennessee finishes 49-7, 25-5 in SEC play. That's the most regular season wins ever for Tennessee. It is the least amount of regular season losses. It marks the second time in program history that Tennessee has lost single-digit games in the regular season. And the other one was, I can't remember the year, back in the 60s and 70s, I think Tennessee went something like 15-9. They didn't play nearly as many games. I guess it would have been more than 15, 25.
Sure.
Something, a lot less games than they played this
year.
Sounds
good to me.
And nine. So that on the overall record, and then the 25-5 SEC record ties the second best record in SEC history. Vanderbilt, I believe their 2013 team, maybe 2012 team, still holds the record at 26-3. The Vols tied a 2000 South Carolina team with a 25-5 record.
There you go. Good stuff right there. Again, make sure to follow Ryan on Twitter at rshump00 and follow RTI on Twitter at Rocky Top Insider all weekend long. We will have you the coverage. We will have you the news. We will have you live from Hoover, Alabama. Ryan, you will be in Alabama this week. I will be in Texas this week. It's going to be a big week for us, and then we'll come back next week and talk about it on the podcast once again. Safe travels, obviously, tomorrow.
Thank you. Yeah, same to you this weekend.
Dude, I am exhausted. We got to get out of here. I am fading quickly. I don't know if I told you this today, but it was a ridiculous morning. I had electricians, right? Pop, 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 banging on my door this morning at 7:30 in the morning. I had no idea they were coming. I had to get up, and then they shut all my power off, and they shut my water off. And now it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The day has been weird. I am tired. I need to upload this. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to probably take a nap.
Yeah, I can't blame you there. Tough to beat a good afternoon nap, especially on an overcast, rainy day.
Hey, that'll be it for us today. Thank you for joining along with us. Thank you for listening along. Make sure to tell a friend about the show, as we are just trying to do our best to bring you the latest Tennessee news, content, and coverage. Remember, we've got a big week coming up this weekend with the college baseball tournament. You can follow Ryan. You can follow Rocky Top Insider. Also, make sure to be following RTI and all the other social medias there is. We have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, all of those accounts just at Rocky Top Insider. Otherwise, you can follow Ryan at rshump00. You can follow me at rick_butler. And otherwise, Ryan, I think that's going to do us for today, my friend.
I think so. A lot of stuff to monitor next week, both baseball and football front as well.
Let's get out of here. Enjoy the week. Enjoy a little bit of college baseball. We'll talk to you next week. This has been the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass.